Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments in the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and BD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email, or in this case, why don't you click onto the archives page. And you can download it right off that archives page right there at georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about business principles, and principles aren't necessarily cast in concrete laws, but rather ideas for you to pick and choose among. And a principle has a penalty. It has an outcome. It may be beneficial to you. For instance, if you're a medical doctor, a monopoly on allopathic medical practice, which is protected by a license that guarantees you this monopoly, which is enforced by coercion, fear, and threat, is of great benefit to you. And I wouldn't deny that all medical doctors need force, threat, and coercion to keep all of their competitors at bay. Because if you had to compete against the naturopaths, you'd shortly find that allopathic medicine would pass into history. And that's because out in the marketplace is not concerned about the producers, it's concerned about the product. It's concerned about the outcome. And the allopathic medical doctor treating cancer has a bad outcome. 37% of the time he can cure the cancer, and 63% of the time he cannot. But the alternative practitioner can cure the cancer 90% of the time. So in the marketplace, what happens is when you let people freely produce and practice without impeding them, they will go out and do their stuff. And then the customers in the marketplace, that is, the guys that see the results, will soon see that the alternative practice produces a better result more consistently for more people at less cost. There will always be customers that want cut, burn, and poison. I mean, you won't eradicate allopathic medicine. We have had witch doctors and allopathic medicine for thousands of years, and it has never been stamped out. It's just that at the same time, we have always had freedom of choice, or at least in many locations, or most of the time. And so people had a choice to make, and when they make that choice, they make the choice in their own self-interest. Their own self-interest. For instance, if we were to stop monopoly, let's say in the drug trade or drug business, we now have 2 million people locked up in our prisons here in the United States. Fully half of them, 1 million, are there on drug charges. These are people who were either selling it or they were buying it. They were buying, selling, and trading in marijuana, cocaine, or heroin. Now, 100 years ago, it wasn't against the law to deal in heroin, cocaine, or marijuana, and we didn't have half of our prison population locked up on these drug charges. In fact, you could go out in the marketplace and buy cocaine. In fact, the Coca-Cola company named their product after Coke. Coca-Cola, cocaine. And it was government that came in and said, no, you can't do that. We're not going to let you sell that cocaine in this way. We want a monopoly on it. And you didn't have any market problems. You didn't have any criminal problems. People that wanted to buy cocaine could, and then people that didn't want to buy it didn't. But there's something about the fruit of the poisonous vine. There's just something about telling somebody that they can't have something, and that's what creates the desire for it. Now, I can have all of the whiskey, beer, and vodka that I want, and I don't buy very much of it, and I don't use it. It's available, and I know that. But if you were to outlaw it like they did during Prohibition, oh, my God, it just makes everybody want to buy more of it. And so we had to lock a lot of people up in prison because they were out buying alcohol, and there were a lot of bootleggers. They were making alcohol, and then we had the revenueers, you know, out here busting the stills up and one thing and another. Just caused a hell of a mess. And so what they did, about 1935 or 6, they came along and they legalized alcohol. Now, you still have alcoholics and you still have drunks. You had alcoholics and drunks before Prohibition, and the do-gooders, the moralists, came along and they said, what we need to do is to outlaw booze, and so they did. And it didn't do anything to alleviate the problem of alcoholism and drunks, because alcoholics and drunks are going to drink, come hell or high water. But you made this the fruit of the poisonous tree, and now it was a chic thing to do. Let's go out and drink. Let's go out to a speakeasy. And alcoholic consumption and production actually was higher during the Prohibition years than it was prior to or after. Isn't that amazing? So when you outlaw something, when you make something illegal, then it adds a little bit of something to it that people desire and want. So we don't want to legalize marijuana, because if we did that, it would destroy the value of it. And by keeping it illegal, it keeps the price up. See, all you're dealing with here with marijuana is a weed. How you can grow it anywhere. And if you were to legalize it, you wouldn't prevent people who are already addicted to it or desire it. Those people are already smoking it, and they're not going to quit. So you're not going to change anything there, any more than you're going to create prohibition and stop people from being alcoholics and drunk. But you could eliminate a million people in prison. You know, you could get rid of that. And the cost of it would go way down, and then the mystique of it would go way down. And people like me, I still wouldn't go out and use it because it's bad for me. And you could still go out and tell people, don't use it because it's bad for you. But you're not dissuading people who want it from getting it. That's my point. And so that's what free markets are all about. Free marketplaces aren't moralists. We're not trying to moralize. McDonald's are bad for you, and we're not going to moralize it and make it good for you. But just leave it alone. And if you do, you'll find that the bureaucratic monopoly is the rule of law. Competitive free enterprise is the exception to the law. We're probably not going to change the bureaucratic monopoly mentality. But for you and I, we don't have to participate in that. There is a free market out here. It's called the black market, the free market, the underground economy. I mean, you know, you can label any way you want, but that's what free markets are all about. In Sarajevo, that $4 cup of coffee, they weren't furnishing coffee for everybody. It's that it was very difficult to get coffee in, and there were people that had $4 to pay for a cup of coffee. Entrepreneurs, when there is a market for something, will fill the market. And right now, there's a market for marijuana, and the free enterprise system fills that market void. And at a very competitive price, about 20% of what it's going to cost you to buy that same marijuana as Marinol, prescribed by a medical doctor and purchased at Rexall or Osco Buttery. So that's the power of the marketplace. And the marketplace works in Russia and China today. The free market does. Just like the free market works in America today. You can't stamp out marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. The free market won't allow it. And that's because the market wants it. The market, that's the people. There are customers out there that want it. Those are the consumers. As long as there's a consumer with $4 in his pocket who wants a cup of coffee in Sarajevo, there's an entrepreneur who's going to smuggle it in, even with artillery shells raining down on the city to sell it. All right, now with that in mind, monopoly, number 136 now. Monopoly and bureaucracy is incident to standing in line to share the shortage. That's what communism has always produced. They always produce a shortage. And then you have to stand in line to share the shortage. And that's what's coming to America. We'll have rationing here shortly. Rationing. See, we haven't had that since World War II. And when you tell Americans that, they look at you and they kind of gasp and say, oh, no, that won't come here. I've never seen that before in my life. That kind of reminds me of jaywalking with Jay Leno. He goes out and asks people questions. And these people, the tragedy of the exercise is these people vote. That's why you have this monopoly and bureaucracy at work. You know, these fools actually go out and vote. Now, number 137, the free market is incident to building new barns to store the surplus. In the Bible, there's a story about a guy that is so wealthy that he has to go out and tear all of his old barns down, build new ones and bigger ones, to hold all of the surplus that he's producing. And that's because the Ten Commandment model is the free market model, and it produces surplus, for which you have to build more barns to store it in. Number 138, profit is the only reason for business. Business does not exist, boys and girls, to employ people. I know our president is sitting up there saying, we need to get busy and create more jobs. No, you don't. No, sir, you don't need to go out and create more jobs. What you need to do is to take the restrictions off business. Now, while business has only one purpose, there's only one motivation for business, and that's profit. Incident to that making of profit, business employs people. The employment of people is not the purpose for business, it is incident to business. It's an outgrowth of business, but it's not the reason, and it's not the purpose for business. All right, business does not exist to make products. I know, somebody's out there saying, well, we got to get busy, and we got to create a green economy. We got to go out here and produce electricity with wind power and all this green energy. Oh, no, you got that backwards, Mr. President. No. The marketplace will determine whether or not windmills should be the source of electric power. The marketplace decides that. If you leave it up to the consumer to choose between coal-fired power and wind power, the consumer will make a choice, and as a result of that, products will be produced. But the business is the place where the product is produced, and that's the source of the determination as to what products will be produced. Business, remember, has one function only, and that's to make profit. As an incident to that profit making, products will be produced. There's no two ways about that. But the making of products is not the purpose for the business. That's the monopoly coming into play. That's the bureaucracy coming into play. They're deciding for us that we want electricity, and we want it produced by wind power. We want it produced by solar power. Well, you got the cart before the horse. Now, I'm not telling you can't do that, because that's what's being done. And I'm not telling you that isn't what's going to be done, because I presume that's what's going to be forced upon us. But that is not going to produce electricity for the most people at the least cost. We have Americans with bureaucracy in Baghdad, and the people of Baghdad have electricity on average 3 hours a day. We don't have any shortage of monopoly in Baghdad, and we don't have any shortage of bureaucracy in Baghdad. What we have a shortage of is electricity. Now, when you leave the marketplace to the entrepreneur, like we did in 1880, between 1880 and 1900, in just 20 years, we electrified America. All the major cities had electricity by 1900. By leaving the marketplace to itself, to be free, to work, the marketplace produced electricity for everybody in America. What you have is brownouts and blackouts and Enrons and collapses and shortages and problems in the electrical generating business today. It's caused by the bureaucracy and the monopoly. If you would take the bureaucracy and the monopoly out of the electrical business of America, you would have more electricity at less cost for more people. Would it be wind power? I don't know. Would it be solar power? I don't know. Would it be coal power? I don't know. But you'd have plenty of it. No shortage at less cost. And that's what the free market does. It's always done it in the past. Now, anytime that you interject monopoly and bureaucracy into the marketplace, it raises costs and limits the productivity or the quantity. It always has, is now, and always will. It's the nature of the beast. You can't take a Doberman pincher, throw a beefsteak down in front of him, and tell him, just sniff it. Not designed for that. He's just going to inhale it. It's the way he's designed. So number 138, profit is the only reason for business. 139, business does not exist to employ people. Number 140, business does not exist to make profits, or products, rather. Number 141, business does not exist to serve people. It's not the purpose of it. Doctors are not there to serve people. They are there to make profit. Number 142, no business can exist without profit or subsidy. If you don't have profit, then you have to have subsidy. And that's what we have in government. We have subsidy. And our government is subsidized. Well, let's just take a look at Homeland Security. You know, they're sitting there saying, hey, we got to have $38 billion a year to make this thing work. What's the purpose for Homeland Security? It's to keep airplanes from getting hijacked. So in America, we spend $38 billion a year to prevent airplanes from being hijacked. And we haven't had an airplane hijacked since 9/11. So the bureaucrat can say, see, it works. He's not lying to you. It does. It works. Now, over in Israel, they've got an airline. It ain't as big as the American Airlines, but it's an airline. And they have pilots, and then they have a way. And they don't have Homeland Security over there. What they've got is armed cockpit crews. And the pilot, the co-pilot, and the flight engineer all have a 45 pistol under their armpits. They don't have any hijackings either. There's never been an LL airliner hijacked. All of the cockpit crew are armed for $500. The Jews can accomplish for $1,500 what Americans have to spend $38 billion to do. And then we get mad at the Jews because of their business practices. Remember, I showed you a business practice a little earlier. Now, why don't you go to your competitor, figure out and learn from him. What's he doing? Now, there was a proposal here. I don't remember who made the proposal, but somebody did. I think it was the Airline Pilots Association. And they said, let's arm all of the cockpit crew. And so the Homeland Security people and all of the government bureaucrats, they said, oh, my God, no, no, you can't do that. These people aren't trained. They're not trained. They can't handle a gun. Excuse me, boys and girls, but, you know, until we've gone totally stark raving mad here, do you mean to tell me that you can train a pilot who can fly a 747 with hundreds of instruments in the cockpit? You can train him to do that. But that same pilot can't learn how to use a 45 pistol? He's incompetent, he's stupid, he's dumb, ignorant, can't? First of all, let me tell you this. Here in America, the airline pilots come from the Navy and the Air Force. Those Navy pilots, you know those Top Gun guys that fly those F-18s on and off of those aircraft carriers? Do you know that all of those pilots have a 45 pistol under their armpit when they take off from the aircraft carrier? Did you know that? I think, if I remember right, I've had some students here that were aircraft carrier pilots. They've all been trained to fly airplanes, and they've all been trained how to use that 45 caliber. Let me tell you one more step. 90% of the pilots that are working for the airlines came from the military. It is true. You do have some girls, females, that are flying airplanes for the commercial airlines that didn't go through the military. And those girls probably have to be trained to use a pistol. But, you know, even those girls, just think about it. They're just girls, but they are flying airplanes. They have to have something between their ears. I mean, you're willing to let her fly the airplane from Miami to Los Angeles. Don't you think that girl could be trained to use a pistol? I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Anyway, the moral of the story is the Jews spend $1,500, arm the cockpit crew, and we Americans spend $38 billion for Homeland Security to accomplish the same thing. And that's because the bureaucracy is subsidized. They don't have to make a profit. It's not a profit-making enterprise. And they don't care if they spend $30 billion, $38 billion, or $50 billion. It doesn't make any difference because you taxpayers are going to pay it and shut up. But if we had a marketplace out here, you know, if we had any reason, logic, and common sense left in America, we would say, let's abandon this Homeland Security. Let's adopt what the Jews are doing for $1,500. And let's just give it a shot, give it a try, and see if we can do, you know, as well as the Jews. We don't have to do better than them. We just have to do equal with them. It's like Kmart and Walmart. Kmart doesn't have to be smarter than Walmart. They just have to be as smart as Walmart. All right, so the free market works without any fear, threat, force, coercion, or intimidation. The free market does not need the force, the coercion, the threat, the fear, and the intimidation that the bureaucracy and the monopolies need. You see, the doctors, the lawyers, the dentists, all of the professions, they need licensing. They need threat. They need force. They need fear to keep their competitors at bay because they cannot compete with their competitors. Their product isn't any good, or it isn't as good. The reason that we have to have threat and fear and force in drug enforcement, it isn't because marijuana isn't good for you. Everybody is convinced that marijuana is good for you. In fact, the pharmaceutical industry is so convinced that marijuana is good that they produce it and they have a trade name for it, and it's called Marinol. It's just that it costs, or they charge, I'm not sure that it costs, but they charge you five times more than what you can buy it for on the street. So all of you policemen out there that are enforcing all these marijuana laws, people who have money go to the doctor and the doctor prescribes it, and they go to the drugstore and they buy it. The poor people who can't or don't want to, then they go down and they buy it and they smoke it. See, the wealthy people, they have it in pills. They get the same effect by taking the pill. Now, you know, if you want to enforce the drug laws and you want to be real macho and knock people's doors down and catch them, and, you know, that's okay. Go ahead and do that. But I just wanted to point out to you that it's counterproductive and that it costs you a lot more money to do that. You got 1 million people locked up in jail. Do you know what it costs to keep 1 million people locked up in jail? $50,000 per person per year. So that's 1 million people times 50,000. That's $50 million a year. Well, that's $50 billion a year. $50 billion a year. You know, that's a chunk of change that you could save, that you know, instead of paying that money out in taxes, that you could keep that amount of money. Let's see, $50 billion, there's 100 million taxpayers. 100 million taxpayers, divide that into 50 billion. And 100 million divided into 50,000 million. So that's the kind of money that we would be saving if we could just eliminate this drug problem in America. And you could eliminate the drug problem in America with the free market system. Free market. All right, number 144. The free market works without any fear, threat, force, coercion, or intimidation. Number 145, the free market exists everywhere in the world alongside bureaucratic monopoly. Isn't that amazing? That's right. The free marketplace works everywhere. When you are walking down the street in Chicago and there's a guy on the street corner selling illegal drugs, that's the free marketplace in operation. When you're walking down the street and you pass a Rexall store, that is the bureaucratic monopoly in operation. It isn't uncommon to have a free marketplace marijuana salesman standing on the street corner in front of the Rexall store selling marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. The free marketplace works right there. Now listen, here's where the free marketplace works with cancer. Here in America, it's against the law for you doctors to use alternative medicine. So here's what people do. They go to Tijuana, Mexico, and they use alternative therapy in Mexico or some other country in the world where it isn't against the law. Let me show you where the free marketplace works. My boy Dirk needed a hip replacement surgery. He needed one of those artificial hips. And so we went into a doctor here in Springfield, and the doctor said, yeah, we can do it, and it'll cost you $30,000. So my wife said to him, we're going to go to India, and we're going to have it done in India for $8,000. We have to spend 6 weeks in India on vacation in the hotel, where we will have the surgery performed, and the ticket to India and back is probably going to be a couple $1,000s. We think that for $10,000 we can get it done in India. And the doctor said, you know, if you're paying cash, which is what you have to do when you go to India, you have to pay cash. When you're buying dope on the street corner, you have to pay cash. They don't take credit cards. They don't take welfare and food stamps. They don't take your Medicare card or your cards. You have to pay cash. So if you're going to go to India, you got to pay cash. And the doctor said, I can do the surgery for $7,000. The anesthesiologist will be $1,400 cash. And the hospital will be about $1,000, $500 a day for 2 days in the hospital. And so my wife said, $7,85, $95. For about $10,000, we could do it here in the States. And she said, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And so for cash, an allopathic medical doctor, and an allopathic anesthesiologist, and a licensed, bonded, and insured St. John's Hospital did it in this country for $10,000 cash. Boys and girls, there's an example of the free marketplace at work, right in the hospital. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you are online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You can click on the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles, principles of business that, if you follow them, have an end result. When you follow the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, there's an end result that comes from that. We Americans have been practicing these 10 planks now for about 100 years, maybe a little over 110. And as a result of that, we now have a result in this country. Now, if you're dissatisfied with the result, you may want to make a change. And here's the bright spot about all of this. It does not require that we vote anybody into or out of office. You can practice the free market, free enterprise system anytime you want. I just showed you here before we took the break there. We have the free enterprise system. Even an allopathic medical doctor can practice free enterprise. And he did. And so did the anesthesiologist, and so did the hospital, and so did we. Now, there's a competitive force. The competitive force is that over in India, Pakistan, the Philippines, Singapore, Hong Kong, those governments over there, or those entrepreneurs, I don't know who it was that did it, they sent their people over here to America to train them in medicine. Then they went back and they built state-of-the-art hospitals. I mean, they've got hospitals over in India that are just as new, just as modern and up-to-date as anything you've got here in America, staffed with people trained here in America, educated here, speak English, probably better than we do. Then they have the standard of living of India, which is, you know, about one-fifth what it is here. Well, $8,000 to do what it costs $30,000 to do over here. So about one-fourth, about 25 to 30% of the price. That's the competitive force that all of you medical doctors have to face. And so what you want to do is to get all these people locked into insurance. So people who have insurance don't have any money. They've spent their money on premiums. That's why I told you a little earlier. See, I practice free enterprise. I take my insurance premiums, $1,000 a month, and put it in a coffee can. And I just save it. And then over time, one time, you know, goes by, 10 years, I got $120,000 in my coffee can, don't I? Now, I need bypass surgery. I just walk into the doctor and say, hey, listen, I need bypass surgery. Should I go to India and pay them $20,000? Or what can you do, doc? Remember, he who has the gold makes the rules. See how simple that is? So it's cheaper, it's easier, it's faster, serves me better. And my boy got his hip transplant. His, you know, he's just happy as a clam at high tide, works like a shot. I'm not here selling hip replacements, but I just wanted to point out that my boy did not pay $30,000 to get the job done. The marketplace came into play. Now, when you have insurance, you have monopoly. And if you want to play monopoly, well, go ahead and do it. That's one outcome. Now, if you want to pay, you know, $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year, and give it to somebody else, get after it. That's the bureaucratic monopolist modality. It's the 10-plank modality. But you can practice the 10-commandment model. You can practice the free enterprise model. And notice that there's no threat, force, or coercion involved, just competitive forces. Doc, do you want the business, or should I go to India? He said, I can do it for seven. If they can do it for eight there, I can do it for seven. And. And then they did it, and then you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. So number 144, the free market works without any fear, without any threat, without any force, without any coercion, and without any intimidation. The free market, number 145, exists everywhere in the world alongside bureaucratic monopoly. And number 146, everyone in the world participates in the bureaucratic monopoly most of the time. You have to. I mean, it's just where it is. I mean, you want to go into Cheddar's, no, there's the bureaucratic monopoly. You want to go into Bonanza, those are licensed institutions. I was in one the other day, and I said, have you got any raw milk? And she looked at me like, what is it? I said, I'm sorry, sweetheart. You don't have any raw milk here, I can guarantee it. This is a licensed restaurant. Now, I have raw milk here on the farm, so when students come here to the farm, you know, and they say, hey, have you got any raw milk? Yeah, you can get raw milk here. You can't get it in most other places. And that's because there's a bureaucracy. There's a monopoly. And Mid-America Dairies, coupled with the legislature, have outlawed raw milk. You can't have raw milk in America. It's against the law. But hey, wait a minute. There are some of us out here that want raw milk. Now, I know most of you are sitting there about ready to puke saying, oh, my God, this guy Gordon's got to be a lunatic fringe if I ever heard one. Nobody in his right mind would want to drink raw milk. It'll kill you. No, it doesn't. I drink raw milk every day. I have been for the last 25 or 30 years, and I'm in very good health. And I don't have a hearing aid. I don't wear glasses. And then I'm still able to go out and do a little work once in a while, not much, but a little bit. I can still go out and dig a post hole and still go out and drive a post in the ground. Now, the moral to the story is we can have raw milk in America right alongside the pasteurized, homogenized milk, but it requires a little more work. I mean, you can have raw milk in every state in the Union. Everybody listening to my voice right now, whether you're in Wisconsin or Rhode Island or Florida or California, I don't care where you're, you can drink raw milk. You can have those benefits that go along with raw milk if you want it. It's not easy. It's not easy. And you're going to have to work at it, and you're going to have to get your head screwed on straight, and you're going to have to do something a little different than the average Joe Sixpack over here to practice the free market where you're at. Boys and girls, marijuana, cocaine, and heroin are sold in every city, every hamlet, every state, every county in America. There isn't any shortage of drugs, both monopoly and bureaucracy drugs and free market drugs. There's no shortage of anything anywhere in the world where the profit margin is in operation, where the profit motive is in operation. So I just want to throw that out there for your consideration. Now, everyone in the world participates in this bureaucratic monopoly, and they do that most of the time. But everyone in the world engages in the free market at least once in a while. All of us do that. Sometimes it's by accident. You know, it's just some guy comes over and knocks on your door and says, I will mow your lawn for $25 or something like that. And so you say, well, get after it, boy. And he goes out and mows your lawn, you pay him $25. There's the free marketplace. You're not making any deductions for his taxes. And you're not giving him a 1099 form, you just paid him $25 cash. That's why one of these days here in America, we're going to see the implementation of Revelation 13:16, where no man can buy, sell, or trade. Every man's going to have a mark in his hand and in his forehead. You see, the monopolists, the bureaucrats, the politicians, they're going to enact a law. They're going to do away with money. They're going to use the cashless society, where no man can buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast. Okay, most people have been brought into the monopoly bureaucratic 10 planks to the communist manifesto market. But there will always be a few of us that escape. Not many, but a few. So if you want to be one of those few, then you should get prepared now. You need to be trained in business now. You need to be prepared for the great ship America hitting the iceberg before it hits the iceberg. After the Titanic hit the iceberg was not a good time to be planning your escape. It should have been done before. Number 148, everyone who is free to choose will choose the free market in his own self-interest. Isn't that amazing? Everyone who is free to choose. The only way that the monopoly market can work is through threat, force, and coercion. Anytime there's freedom of choice, hey, the monopoly market won't work. Now, there's always going to be people who want to buy from the monopoly market, and I don't doubt that. There will always be people that want something different. But the majority, if you're taking a look out here at the majority, the free market works best for the most people at the least cost, where it's unimpeded and not interfered with. Now, you don't find that in the marketplace. Just driving down the street, all of the businesses that are out there hawking their wares are licensed. And every licensed business is a monopoly. It's a bureaucratic monopoly. And it has to be. Cheddar's, Olive Garden. They don't have any choice. They have to be licensed, bonded, and insured, and they can't serve raw milk. Even if we want it, they can't serve it. If the majority of people could express their unimpeded desires, the marketplace would be vastly different today than it is. The reason the marketplace is what you see today is because that's what's forced upon us. And the reason you're drinking pasteurized milk is because you don't have any choice. If you had a choice now, there would be a lot more people drinking a lot more raw milk, which would be really bad for mid-America dairies and really bad for doctors and dentists and everybody else, because raw milk cures disease. You know, God gave us a land of milk and honey. It wasn't pasteurized. The idea that you have to have pasteurized milk is something that's been forced upon you. You believe it, but it doesn't make it true. I mean, I remember a nurse one time, they had a Jersey cow in California. A nice-looking Jersey cow, too. I told Louie, I said, my God, that's a damn good-looking cow you got there. Where'd you get her? And his daughter, who was a nurse, when they milked the cow, she took the milk in the house and pasteurized it. And I asked her, I said, why are you pasteurizing the milk? And she said, well, you can't drink raw milk. It'll kill you. And I'm sure that she believed that. And I told her, I said, well, I drink raw milk out of my Jersey cows and it hasn't killed me yet. That doesn't mean that it isn't going to, but it hasn't yet. And we got to talking about a little bit, and I steered around to a book that's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. And it was written by a medical doctor who got into the milk controversy and said, hey, why do we have pasteurized milk? It's not by accident. Pasteurized milk is there by design. It's part of the monopoly. And the people that control the milk market, they're not going to allow non-pasteurized milk or non-homogenized milk into the marketplace if there's anything they can do about it. And I don't deny that. But there's a free market out there in milk. There's a free market out there. Now, I noticed the other day, just to give you a little illustration here, we went to town the other day, and there were no roadside stands. None. Zero. Zilch. You cannot buy a watermelon or a cantaloupe or a tomato or a pepper from alongside the highway. Well, not here. Why is that? Well, see, they began enforcing this law on sales tax. So if you set up a little roadside stand and you start selling cantaloupes and sweet corn, stuff like that, an undercover agent will come along, buy from you, and then arrest you for selling without a sales tax permit. So they put them all out of business, which is exactly what Walmart consumers and Dillon's stores want. They don't want anybody buying watermelons and cantaloupes from some guy that's producing alongside the highway. That's competition. They don't want that competition. So they come along and say, well, it isn't right for this guy not to have a sales tax permit. Well, listen, Walmart, dealing with billions of dollars a year, sales tax is no problem to them. Some little guy that's got a garden, it's a big problem to him. So these regulations, these permits, tend to weed out all of the little producers in favor of the big producers. And then the huge producers weed out the littler, smaller producers. This is why competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. The day will come in America when there is one store called Walmart where you buy your groceries. All others will be merged. The day will come when there will be one bank. I don't know what the name of it will be, maybe Bank of America. And then all banking will be done through that bank. So everyone, number 148, everyone who is free to choose will choose the free market in his own self-interest. Number 149, monopolists and bureaucrats are moralists. Entrepreneurs and free market businessmen are not. So I'm not in the business of telling you that you need a legal education because. I'm not here to force you to get a legal education. I think it's a good idea, and here's why. Here's why it's good for you, and here's why it will put money in your pocket, and here's why the amount that you spend on tuition will be less than a tenth of what a legal education will pay you. So when I finish with my presentation and I say, here's why a legal education is of value for carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, that's what the free marketplace is all about. It's an exchange of ideas without force and without coercion. You don't have to have a law school degree. You don't have to be a licensed lawyer. You just need a legal education so that the licensed lawyers and the doctors and the rest of the people in society don't take advantage of you. So that you can read the laws and find out, well, here's what I need to do in order to comply with the laws. You see, there's always an exception written into the law. And what you need to be trained in is code pleading so that you can see what the law requires and what it doesn't require. And then you will be equipped to comply with all the laws, all the rules, and all the regulations. I can sell raw milk right here today, and I'm not in violation of any law. We can sell raw milk in every state in the union and never violate a single law. And we can do it through the free market. There's a free market out there. Now, the monopolists don't like that. Remember that monopolists and bureaucrats are moralists, but entrepreneurs and free market businessmen aren't. We're not here to moralize. I'm not here to tell you that you ought to drink raw milk. That's a choice for you to make. And I just want to be free to tell you what raw milk offers in opposition to pasteurized milk. And then I think that you're smart enough to make your own decision in your own self-interest. What I'm opposed to is not being allowed to give you the other side of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. Number 150, monopolists and bureaucrats produce fear, threat, coercion, intimidation, and force, and they sell poverty, shortage, long lines, hunger, famine, war, and want. Conversely, the entrepreneur produces freedom of choice. He produces it in a free market to sell abundance, plenty, satisfaction, wealth, and without waiting in line. That's what I sell. That's what I would like to sell. Now, not everybody wants to buy that. And I certainly don't want to force anybody to buy freedom of choice in a free market. I don't want to force anybody to buy abundance, plenty, satisfaction, wealth, and without waiting in line. If you want to buy force, poverty, shortages, lines, hunger, famine, war, and want, hell, you've already got that. Stick with the program. You've already got it. You can't miss. But what I wanted to point out this week is that there is a choice. There's an opposite. There's another way. And we don't have to break the law to do it. God himself has put enough into the Ten Commandment model, into the free enterprise model, that we can comply with all the laws. And that's one of the tricks that we teach our students here. We have to obey all the laws of the United States. I have to obey all the laws of Missouri. And then I have to obey all the laws of God and do them all at the same time. And then when you do that, it's called the Ten Commandment model in the free enterprise system. Works like a shot. It works right alongside the monopoly market. Just like the doctor. He didn't break any laws. He needed to be paid cash. And the anesthesiologist needed to be paid cash. And they did. They got paid cash. When they get paid by insurance, do you know that the doctor would have to wait at least 3 months to get paid? He might make $12,000 to $14,000 for doing the operation. But the insurance company isn't going to pay him for a minimum of 3 months. And if they could stretch that out for 6 months or more, they would, because that benefits their average daily balance. So you doctors out there and you hate insurance or you don't like the system, well, that's because you're playing Monopoly. Have you ever thought about incorporating some free market provisions into your practice? I mean, maybe you can't go cold turkey free market, but have you thought about doing some free market business? There's a Jewish doctor in Springfield. He does circumcisions for $75. A circumcision in the hospital costs $5,000 here in Springfield, Missouri, at the hospital. And we have a doctor, a Jewish doctor, that does it for $75 in his office. That's the free market in operation. So let's get real mad at the Jewish doctor. Huh? He's not breaking any laws. He can do that, and he can do it for cash. It's just that he would rather do it for $5,000 in the hospital. It pays better. Monopoly pays monopolists, and it pays bureaucrats, but it doesn't pay you and me because we have to subsidize it. Hey, I'm about out of time here again, boys and girls, so I'm going to have to give you a reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.